Nick Vogelzang joins us now from Vogelzang Law. Nick, good to meet you, my friend.
Good to meet you. How are you doing?
I am doing great. Thanks for asking. I'm doing great on a Saturday afternoon. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Born and raised here in the Chicago area, right?
Yeah. Born in Maywood, Illinois, and then raised in Western Springs, and then went to college in Grand Rapids, Michigan at Calvin University, then over to St. Louis University for law school.
Did you know you always wanted to be a lawyer growing up?
You know, I did in high school. In the yearbook, it says, most likely to be a lawyer.
Was that supposed to be a nice thing that people said back then, or was that a little dig?
I don't know. I watched L.A. Law. It was really popular when I grew up, and my mom was a lawyer, and I just was attracted to it. I knew it would be a good job for me. I argue a lot and have a lot to say.
I got most school spirit, so I don't know what that says about me. Probably nothing good. I was the biggest nerd in the school, probably, at Downers Grove South. Okay, so you always wanted to do law. Did you know what kind of law you wanted to be involved in, or you just wanted to be a lawyer and you knew you'd figure it out after that?
I wanted to litigate, which is the lawyers that go to court. So I knew that part. Beyond that, I didn't. So when I got out of law school, I was about as poor as you could be, in debt, and just took the first job I could get. I worked at an insurance defense firm, and we represented people who rear-ended other people.
You represented the people who caused the accidents. Or no?
Yes, we did. Uh-huh. For the insurance company, for State Farm and Allstate.
Right.
They were assigned a lawyer, and I would show up all 24 years old of myself and try to get them through the lawsuit.
And insurance companies need lawyers too, right?
Of course.
That's part of the game here.
It was very entertaining, great professional experience. Did that for a year. And then my father, Dr. Vogelzang, was an oncologist at University of Chicago.
A very famous one, by the way.
He was, yeah. World-renowned for his treatments. So it was a very great privilege to have him as my dad. And I would go to him and say, you know, I don't see a lot of career satisfaction here. And he said, you should help my patients. They need lawyers. And he and I, both of us, didn't really know that how much litigation was behind people who had mesothelioma. But he just started saying to his patients, you know, if you're looking for a lawyer, call my son. And I had to scramble incredibly quickly to learn how to litigate, figure out what these cases, the value of these cases, and how to get them through the system. So that was the origin of it all.
That's an incredible story.
Yeah.
Your dad recognized that there were so many people that he was treating that probably had some sort of legal case, but he didn't know exactly what it was. You had to scramble to figure out maybe what it was, and you're able to, wow. And so there had to be many clients that their lives were saved by your dad, essentially, and his team, and then you helped them get what they deserve.
Yeah, you know, the patients loved it because they loved telling me how much they loved my dad, and then they knew, obviously, there was a ton of accountability because you can't screw up something that your dad sends your way. So
that's true.
Right?
It's kind of like when you buy a house and everyone, they have like a whole team set up where the lawyer is, they know a guy and they know a guy, they know a girl, they know a girl. I'm like, well, hey, this whole team floats or rises together, so.
Yeah, and it's a lot better than, you know, there's nothing wrong with figuring out who your lawyer should be from a billboard or something like that. Yeah. But if you've got somebody who says, hey, I know this guy is a good lawyer, well, then of course you go that way. So
was it hard to learn quickly? And can you just remind people actually before we get to that, what is mesothelioma?
Yeah, it's a cancer on the lining of the lung. So if you think of your lung in a sausage casing, there's that liner there that your lungs are in. And the cancer, unfortunately, grows like an orange peel around your lung. And it's only caused by asbestos exposure.
It's the only thing that causes that we know of?
That we know of, yes. There's been some theories floated out there, but nothing that's been proven. So asbestos only.
So if someone has mesothelioma, you can say that they had an asbestos, you know, I don't know what the
exposure
at some point in their life.
Yes.
Wow. Okay. Well, we're going to have to pick up the rest of that story after the break in the news, but I'm very interested in it. If someone's running out of the car, who do you want reaching out to you, by the way? Is it someone that maybe knows that they are suffering from this, or you do a lot of other work too with a lot of other cases?
We do lung cancer and mesothelioma. So anybody who's been diagnosed or if their family member has in the last 2 to 3 years should give us a call.
And the website is vogelzanglaw.com, VOGELZANG law.com. Do you have the number off the top of your head, Nick, or do you want to do that after the break?
I do have it, 312-466-1669.
312-466-1669. More with Nick and your questions if you got them. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. Nicholas Vogelzang. We were talking before the break about how how your firm got started, and you were already a lawyer. Your dad, who had established some incredible techniques, medicine, and to really revolutionize how mesothelioma was treated, said, hey, a lot of my patients need lawyers, and you should be their lawyer. And that's how you got started in this field.
Yeah, and just to go back a little bit, just a fun story, he was a new doctor at University of Chicago, so they gave him the toughest patients. And there were so many people with mesothelioma at that time in 03, because they were coming out of the steel mills on the south side, U.S. Steel, Inland Steel, Bethlehem Steel. And they use a lot of asbestos in that process, as far as all the piping that's covered in asbestos, pipe covering. Anyway, so he had to treat all these patients. And because he had such a large cohort of patients, that allows you to try different treatments and do research and get that published. And so he was able to try different chemotherapies and figured out Alimta and cisplatin actually slowed the growth of the cancer and extended life. So that was really, that's how he made his mark. And that's right when I was coming into the practice. So a lot of people wanted to see him for that particular disease because he was published. And then he had all these people who needed a lawyer. So there it was. It was good timing.
With mesothelioma, like you said, it is caused by asbestos. That's the only thing we know causes it, which I don't want to say that makes it an easy case for you, because I'm sure they're harder, but you can draw pretty direct links between asbestos exposure and mesothelioma, right?
Oh, yes. In a certain way, it is an easy case. But of course, when there's lawyers involved, things get very complex very quickly. But from a client's standpoint, yeah, it's pretty straightforward. But yeah, it's a hard question.
Are mesothelioma cases going down? Or are they going up? Because I know we've become way more aware of what asbestos is and how to properly handle it, we think, at least, right?
Yeah, I'd say they're going down about 5% a year. That's because the disease is latent. So if you were exposed in 1970, you're likely to have it 30 to 50 years later.
Hmm.
So now that most exposures in the 60s and 70s, a lot of those guys have passed on. And I say guys because those are most of the people that were working in those situations. Mm-hmm. We have had plenty of wives who clean their husband's clothing who ended up with it.
Are you kidding?
No, that's about probably 5% of the cases.
Wow.
I would say. I had a bus driver who used to bus insulators around at a shipping yard. And that bus driver got it from all the bus driver or the passengers coming in and out. There's medical articles about a dog getting mesothelioma from the owner who brought it home.
Wow.
Yeah, it's scary stuff,
really. It's a dangerous thing, right?
It is. It gets in the air, and it gets entrained in the carpet and the couch, and it doesn't go anywhere, and you can't see it. It's odorless, tasteless, and there it sits.
And it's still in a lot of places. It's just kind of covered. It's not quote-unquote dangerous until it, what, becomes airborne, right?
Right. And I'll give you a little public service announcement here.
Please.
One of the places that's relevant to everyone listening here is in baby powder. If you've got baby powder at home in your shower or somewhere where you use it, pick it up and look and see if it contains talc. Talc is mined out of the ground, out of Vermont, Italy, China. And where talc grows in the ground, it's a mineral. It is usually, it's the same conditions that create asbestos mines or where asbestos minerals are. So when you mine talc, you get asbestos in there. So anything that has talc, now remember, baby powder, you make a cloud of dust.
Yeah. It's...
So you could easily be exposed. And I'm not just saying this off the cuff. We had an expert testify to this, to billions of fibers of asbestos if you've got talc. Now, that's not to start a complete panic, because occupational exposure of many years is commonly what you see for mesothelioma. But still, you don't want to be using talc for years and years and hope for the best. If you've got talc in your shower, just throw it away and replace it with the cornstarch replacement.
Okay.
So,
yeah, because it's, I mean, the exposure is what makes you more likely to develop a cancer if it's repeated exposure. But it's like we talked about during the break, it's like cigarette smoking.
Yeah.
A couple cigarettes, most likely you're not getting lung cancer, but there's no guarantee.
Right. Smoke a pack a day, your risk goes up. Smoke two packs a day, your risk goes up. Do it for 40 years. So that's kind of how you have to look at asbestos, too.
Right.
It's still pretty rare, but it's not as rare the more you're around it.
So what sorts of cases are you working on? You mentioned talc. You mentioned asbestos. Just general lung cancers? Is that like your, I hate to put it like this, bread and butter? That's an insensitive way to put it. But like, is that really what you're doing a lot of litigation on?
We sure are. A lot of people, so I'll tell you about synergy with asbestos and smoking. Guys who smoke cigarettes, and I keep saying guys, I don't mean to, but
yeah, that's
our majority of our clients, they're nine times more likely to get cancer. If you're around asbestos, you're 10 times more likely to get just lung cancer, not mesothelioma. If you smoke and you worked with asbestos, you're 90 times more likely to get lung cancer. So a lot of the clients out there, they get lung cancer, they blame themselves, say they smoked, and it's not really their fault because a lot of these corporations made it so that it was addictive. But that, put that aside, people just assume, okay, I smoked, that's why I got it. But if they were working the trades around asbestos in the 70s, even into the 80s, sometimes into the 90s, that lung cancer is there in part because of the asbestos. So it's not as strong of a case as a mesothelioma case, but it still has a lot of punch, and it's definitely worth getting represented for that.
Right. Let me just rewind. So mesothelioma, we know, comes from asbestos. General lung cancer, a lot of things can affect that. Someone is one, maybe a potential client who says, well, I did smoke. That's what did it. They don't seek out any legal help because they think that's what did it. When it turns out, if they also worked in the trades, they were around this, you have ways of showing that, look, you can't definitively 100% say what did or didn't do it, but you can certainly build a case that could get them some of what they deserve, right?
Right. A person, yes. You shouldn't be your own lawyer, right?
That's good advice.
So if you have lung cancer and you think you're around asbestos, you should call a lawyer and say, hey, this is what my diagnosis is and this is where I worked, and work backward from there with the lawyer and they can figure it out.
Okay. I know you've done a lot of big cases. Any you want to shout out here as you and your firm are proud of?
Yeah, we had a really good spring this year. So we did a case against a company that made hot tops that's made in the steel process. And we represented a great guy, Mr. Kane. And if he's listening, I hope he's doing well. He worked around these hot tops, and they had billions of fibers in them. It would be something that would be put on the steel when you pour the molten steel. And then after the steel cools, you knock it off, and that puts all the fibers in the air. He worked at the steel mill for a good 40 years. And we were able to get a verdict for $7.4 million on his behalf. And, you know, we had a really hardworking judge, a really hardworking jury. And that's the kind of result you're looking for. Now, you know, I talk about a trial that's the most interesting, but 99% of these cases do settle.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we really want, is a resolution for the client, get some closure for the family. They're going through a rough time. They've got to deal with chemo and medical care and hospice, unfortunately. So most of the time we're looking for a settlement. But in this case, we didn't. And then we had one other case, a talc case, Mrs. Garcia, who passed away from mesothelioma. And she had six children. She used Johnson & Johnson's talcum powder on her babies, and her mom used it on herself. And her mom testified, which is very rare in these cases. The plaintiff died at 53 years old. Talked about her mom testified how she used talc on the plaintiff, Mrs. Mm-hmm. Garcia. And so now we had a trial team come in from Texas to work with us on this case. And that ended up in a $45 million verdict after 5 weeks at trial at the Daly Center. Because the talc powder was found to be contaminated with asbestos. Now, they are still disputing that, and right. I'm sure it'll go to an appeal. So it is a verdict, though, and it's something that, yeah, we're very proud of.
These cases that you're talking about, these are individual cases. We've had other firms on here that do great work, that do multi-district litigation. We've talked to people that do class action. That's not what you do.
Yeah, years ago, some firms tried to bring together one big class of asbestos plaintiffs. The problem is, and this is what the court said, that you've got so many different exposures. One guy might be at a steel mill. Another guy might be drywalling his home. And then you've got different disease levels. You also have, which we didn't mention, asbestosis. That's the easiest disease in a way, but that can get severe. And then you've got lung cancer and meso. So you can't really jam all those people into the same class. And then you also have different defendants. You don't just have one defendant. A lot of times with multi-district litigation, or with class actions, you'll have one defendant, so that allows that. But here you don't. Here okay. you have potentially 200 defendants in an asbestos case.
847 has a question. Tell you what, why don't we take a break? I'm going to prep you for a couple of these questions, so I don't ask you live on air.
Sounds good.
We'll have a few more minutes here with Nicholas Vogelzang. What number do you want people to reach you at, by the way, Nick?
312-466-1669.
I've called you Nicholas and Nick. What do you prefer?
I like them all. Whatever you want to call me.
We got a couple questions about the talc and the baby powder. And you did say, Nicholas, you don't want to cause a panic that
right.
there's talcum powder and a lot of people have used it.
Yes.
We have questions like, oh, if you used it in your socks when you were younger, is that a problem? You don't know. But generally speaking, what do you have to say about that?
Well, there's nothing you can do about it now, and it's still a very, very rare cancer. So you still have, I don't know, 1 in 10,000 chance. I don't know what the chances are, but I wouldn't worry about the past. I'm just saying, get rid of your talc if you can now, and don't worry about what it was.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of risks in life, so just don't deal with it if it comes up, but I don't think it will. You're probably
Don't live the rest of your day today freaking out.
Exactly.
And I'm talking to myself now when I say that to you.
Yeah.
As I told you off the air, every time I have any sort of ailment or pain, my most common Google, if I have to type into Google, is this cancer, always comes up automatically. Well, I think a lot of people are like that now, right? We hear a lot of stories. You come on the radio, we talk about these serious issues, and of course they are serious. I guess the number one thing I would say is go do your physical every year. Talk to the medical professionals. If you have symptoms, tell them. Don't sit on them forever. And if it ends up being something, you'll at least have the knowledge is power to deal with it.
Yeah, we come in when there's a diagnosis. The human body is amazing. It really pushes away so many toxins, you can't believe it. I mean, look at what we breathe in the air when we walk down the street, all those diesel fumes, and we're still fine most of the time. So,
right.
I wouldn't worry.
Someone, Peggy, I'm not going to be able to put you on the line, Peggy, but her father passed away from idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis. She's wondering, oh, she's hearing this about talc, she's hearing this about asbestos. And wondering if that could be have caused by that. And I think the general answer for all of these is probably maybe, right?
Yeah, I'd have to see the pathology report if there is one. And I'm not a doctor, so that would be that's a deeper dive kind of question. The answer is possibly, like you said.
So then that's what I want to know is, like, who should be calling you? Is it people whose parents maybe passed away years ago and they're wondering maybe that was the case? Or is it people that are dealing with the disease now? Like, who's an ideal candidate that might be listening now or someone that knows that really you could maybe help out?
So when you get a diagnosis, it's from a biopsy. So they stick a needle between your ribs and they poke into the tumor or what they think is the tumor. They pull that out and then they put it under the microscope and analyze it. And if they say this is cancer, now you've been diagnosed with cancer. So in the next 2 to 3 years, but obviously if you're going to take legal action and you know you have cancer and it might be asbestos, you want to do it as soon as possible because you want to be healthy to be able to work with the lawyers and have your memory about what you were around. So it's after the diagnosis as soon as possible within 2 to 3 years.
I imagine that's a really hard phone call for someone to make. They have just been diagnosed with this. They're trying to deal with living and making it through. And
now they have to deal with these
lawyers.
And now
they have to deal with you. So what is that conversation like?
Well,
what can people expect?
So I like to think that my dad's bedside manner carried down to me, and I try to sit down at kitchen tables. We don't have people come downtown. That's a pain. We all know that. So we go out to the burbs or wherever people are living, and we sit down with the person who has cancer, if they're feeling up to it, and any family members that want to attend. And we just get to know them a little bit and build some trust and make sure they like the idea or they're open to the idea of getting compensation, and we see about the asbestos exposure and if there's a potential case. So we take it easy. It's not like an aggressive situation. It's let's have some coffee, sit in the dining room or the kitchen, and just talk for a while.
And I imagine it may not be the most fun conversation to have, but if you don't think there's a case, you're going to tell someone that. You're not going to drag them through litigation if you don't think you're going to win.
Yeah, we only get paid through whatever we are able to recover. So if we don't see a recovery there, we let the client know, hey, this isn't a case for us. If there's another law firm that can do it or see a different angle, we encourage that. But yeah, we figure it out in the beginning as soon as possible because people deserve to know. You got to know that stuff.
Right. You know, anytime we talk about settlements and the millions of dollars, maybe not so much for like lung cancer cases because that's an extreme event. People can imagine, oh yeah, you have medical bills, you have all that. But like the damages on top of that, sometimes people critique like, oh, we're such a litigious society. It is the only system we have, though. It is the only remedy we have if you were harmed in a way that you shouldn't have been, is financially. And I know that rubs people the wrong way sometimes, but I imagine if you can't pick up your grandkids anymore, like that's not something you can put a number on. But you guys kind of have to do some of that stuff.
Yeah, one of the ways we explain it is, like, let's say a megacorp, I'm just saying a fake name, runs over your loved one and they're deceased. They die from it. Well, they took something from you and now they have to replace it. Well, they can't replace the life. So what do you do when someone takes something from you and they can't give it back? They have to give you compensation for that. They have to pay for that loss. And the other thing it does is it allows the regular person to take on a mega corporation, because when we sue companies that are multi-billion dollars all across the world, they bring their best lawyers here to Chicago to fight. And a regular person who gets injured can't take on Megacorp. They need lawyers, and so we're able to do that because of the system that's built that way.
And you probably don't want to pat yourself on the back too much, but if someone, the opposing lawyers, know Vogelzang Law is on it, people that have dealt with these cases before, do you think they're more eager to settle, just knowing your track record and what you've done?
You know, I'm really good friends with a lot of lawyers on the other side. I've been working with them now for 23 years. We've got a lot of good relationships, and they know that we get trials, we have verdicts, and that if we want to go to the mat, we can. So we try to work things out, and I think that me being in the industry and being very niche, very specific to asbestos, sure, that helps a lot. I don't think you can go to a lawyer who doesn't practice within asbestos and have them represent you for your asbestos case. You need all those relationships with defense counsel, with the judge, with the system. Chicago is a great system for it. The Daly Center, Judge Sherlock runs our asbestos motion call and our trial call, and he does a great job. So, yeah, you have to know what you're doing.
And the institutional knowledge that you've gleaned from experts who have been working with you for years.
Yeah, we have a stable of experts that we lean on for these trials, and even consulting them sometimes when we have a funky case and we say, hey, what do you think about this? So you have to have those relationships too, for sure.
All right. The number is 312-466-1669. 312-466-1669. VogelzangLaw.com. At the end of your bio, you say you're an avid golfer and your handicap is under 7. Okay. Well, I was going to say we should go golfing sometime, but I just slow you down. Nicholas, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks a lot. It was a pleasure to be on.
And we'll hope to talk to you soon. 312-466-1669.